and welcome to Second Wind for the Infinite Campaign. This is episode 69.
Nice.
Great balls of Briar. And with me, I have Chris Damaris and Barbara Dunkelman. Say hello, everybody.
Hello. I'm Gum Gum in the house.
Hello.
I don't like that.
Hello, everybody. It's me, Barb.
I don't like whatever I did. Yours was good, Barb.
It's Gum Gum in the house.
What is that, DJ Gum Gum?
I didn't even do Gum Gum voice. I just did me. That's why it was...
It's very episode 69 energy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
Get ready for some awkward energy, baby.
Groovy.
Groovy, baby. This episode, what a creepy intro to start the episode.
Yeah. Everyone's staring at us with those yellow eyes.
Torthor teleporting in, Gus getting that one slight jab of, I can teleport more than once a day. Kyborg.
So good.
I love it. God.
Yeah, I thought this was a really cool episode that wasn't like a dungeon crawl, wasn't like an Animal Crossing episode. It was just kind of this like dealing with the situation presented to you as you explore and figure out what's happened.
Yeah.
The veil was lifted and suddenly you were set into this really creepy area, even like the castle later on in the episode.
So
I wish we had Micah on this episode only because I'm curious and I might just ask him this after this recording. The music in this episode was very reminiscent of our Grotesque campaign music because it's like obviously a little bit more spooky horror kind of theme. So I'm wondering if him doing this music and doing this kind of arc in this moment maybe inspired Grotesque a little bit because I'm just like, ooh, I'm getting those like Grotesque scary vibes. So I'm wondering if there's a relation
there. That's very interesting. Well, I want to really quickly read for you some of my notes that I had for this.
Oh, good.
And I say this because I accidentally was trying to figure out what to order on a menu this weekend. And I accidentally just grabbed up my notes app and just started typing. And it was in the middle of my notes for this episode. So I ordered, it sounds pretty good, truffle honey burrata, baked crab cake, lobster bisque, steakhouse wedge, and mashed potatoes. Yum.
And those are in your episode notes. Yes,
they're in the middle of my notes.
Please tell me you told whoever you're ordering food from that you wanted a side of amnesia.
Yeah. I'll take a side of Sump locked in the closet.
But I did like the Nazgul scream. That was creepy, you know, like the good sound.
Oh, yeah.
Gus was leaning into that invasion of the body snatchers, yeah. Children of the Corn, all eyes on you. Something feels off, but you're not quite certain what it is with the intro to this episode.
Yeah.
Ooh, I hated it. / loved it. I mean, yeah. It was cool.
I mean, it set you up for such a fun intro, though, of like, I loved Mud's idea of like, okay, fog cloud, let's get like all eyes off of us. And then Bart just like walks on out to chat with everybody and make sure, hey, what's going on, guys?
I'm like, something in our teeth? What's going on? We're looking at us like this. The very telling methods of how we go.
Yeah, it's always funny when we just have different approaches and we're like, what if we did both of them?
A lot of this episode was just throwing prompts at you all and seeing like what you wanted to improv and how you wanted to get out of it. So even this intro amnesia fight, you had the option to fight or escape. And it very quickly went from, oh man, we're really gonna have to like save Bart now that Bart's like walked out and is being engulfed or taken by these amnesias, to John going, Gus, I'm gonna wreck your stuff. And Gus going, oh no, my stuff. And then out of the fog, a bunch of giant lizards.
Yep. Yeah, I loved the lizards. I was like, initially, I was like, oh man, I got an idea. I want to use my Rainbringer staff and clear the way. But which I did think worked pretty well. And I love that Gus was like, so what do you need to say anything for that? And I was like, I want boom, lightning, boom. Like, it's the most stuttered gum.
I wrote down in my notes, boom. Chris, one of my favorite moments of this was asking Chris what the activation words were for the lightning staff. And I wrote, I want lightning.
Yeah.
Yeah. Boom.
I think, which I do feel like, I mean, one, it was just me being bad at things and speaking bad as I am.
That never happens, Chris. You are fluent in the linguistics.
Yes. So fluent that I sometimes like... can't get my, I'm so fluent, it's sometimes slippery.
Just the way you did it now.
Yes.
I'm so fluent, slippery.
It requires a little bit of Chris translation, you know?
Yeah. But I do think like Gum Gum's idea of magic is very much like, oh yeah, it's like you say magic. So it's like the, I want magic, boom.
Lightning.
Very straightforward.
Yeah. I don't know. Rudimentary, like childlike of magic.
It fits with the spirit of Gum Gum. I feel like it just fits really well with your character, Chris.
It's like a little toddler that's just learning how to communicate. And it's just going like, eat, eat, more, more. Yeah. And it's just like saying the words of the things it knows it wants. It's like Gum Gum.
Yeah. Show me the magic.
Flower.
Well, after you guys get out of this situation, you guys come across or come back to Bramble Castle.
Mm-hmm.
Like what were your thoughts with as you explored and kind of this like creepy tone just keeps coming back into the episode, stumbling into Sump and suddenly being mouthless. Like even after Mud, I think casts like dispel magic and the vines go away, but like Sump's mouth is still stitched or
that
closed.
Was creepy.
It is creepy.
It reminded me of the Matrix.
Yeah. Which is a creepy scene in the Matrix.
Very creepy.
I like how he wrote in the paper, help, amnesiacs in the castle. And as Gum Gum, I was like, duh.
It was funny in that moment too, because he's there without a mouth, so he can't really communicate. And we end up giving him a quill and paper, which I initially said is pen and paper and realized that pens don't exist. but I'm wondering, like, if we didn't do that, how would we have gotten information from him?
So what Micah has written in the module is a lot of this stumbling back into Bramble Crap.
Speaking of, it's not so easy.
Stumbling into, it's all Micah's writing. I blame Micah. Stumbling back into Bramble Castle for this initial area was kind of like to give you all a little info of like what's happened since you've been gone, like what's been going on. And most of that was one, finding Sump, who is bound by entangling vines and weeds and moaning because his mouth is missing. He's only able to gesture or write things down to communicate. If freed, he can try to communicate the following. Amnesia has gotten to the castle. Sump tried to stop them, but he suddenly found himself bound without a mouth and trapped in the closet. And it sounded like the Amnesias captured Mud's family and Shaman Seuss, then headed upstairs. So just kind of setting a little bit of like that initial what happened in the castle. If you explored further and gone into like Mud's room and Lady Sandra and Lord Lomish's room, on the bedside table, haphazardly scrawled into the bedside table were three letters, S-U-E, which would have clued you in a little bit to Seuss having something to do with this.
Wait, where was
that? Nefarious or not.
On the bedside tables of the family, I guess.
Yes.
But I don't think we ever went into their rooms, right?
That's correct.
Yeah,
you found something, kind of like pushed you on.
And then we were like, we're going to go back out and climb up.
Yeah. Yeah. Which, some of my favorite moments this episode specifically was Kyborg falling perfectly into the room because he decided to kick it.
I know. I love that. In the moment, I was like, yeah, this is awesome. I was so happy with it.
Chris, you were so excited.
Talk about thinking on your feet. Like Kyborg was literally like...
Good pun.
Like you could tell in that moment I was re-listening and Gus presents what's happening. And I hear Blaine go like... I figured it out. I could figure out how I could change this to my advantage.
But we didn't know, right?
Yeah.
No, we had no idea, especially because when I went in, I was invisible. and so I'm just like, Kyborg, catch me. Like, not having any idea where I was going
to
fall.
I love the idea of too, of like using the vest of slow descent, like where you're falling and just,
listen to the sound of my voice.
Yeah. I thought it was really interesting, both how smart I laughed in this episode because I couldn't remember like how I felt during recording, but you mentioning that the tower window was still available to climb up through. And I was like, that's genius. Like that's such a good idea to get them back to where they need to go to re-remember that and take something you did in an earlier episode. But I really liked you all splitting up and Gus describing the rooms and letting you all come to the conclusion that way they were different rooms and not just immediately telling you. Cause there was a lot of like fun, both comedy, but confusion on like, okay, hold on, wait, are we in the ice biome? Like, where are we? What's going on?
Yeah. That was a fun little mechanic. I love that.
It kind of reminds me of if anyone's listened Out of Order or has already listened to Set Campaign, that one time we went through a dungeon with our headphones off where we split up. And so we didn't know that what the other person had experienced. And it was a really fun mechanic.
That was fun for me because I went in first. So I got to see what you guys did.
See how different people do different.
Make the same mistakes I did. Another nod to the Groteth campaign in this one. Bart at some point pretends to be a bat. I don't know if you guys picked up on that.
Oh, that yeah. That was really, I thought that was really funny, mostly because you did a click and a screech. And I could tell you were like trying not to appease either John or Gus with that by just doing both.
Right.
That was really good.
Well, because we made so many references to, I thought it was like a big debate in our community back then. The if bats clicks or screeches.
Say community, but also really between John and Gus.
John and Gus, too.
If you would be so kind, Ben, can you just tell us what the heck was going on with those biomes? And if I know we solved it, but like, was that what was intended, or like what was the plan?
It's really funny you mentioned that because yes, you guys did solve it the way that Micah wanted it to be solved. I'm going to talk to both of those because as I was listening through the Room of Ice Knives, I was also like, oh, I'm really interested what this was. The Room of Ice Knives was mostly a mix of like gravity messing with you all, as well as like a ice knife trap that went off on like a timer. So it wasn't like any kind of like you activate it. It was just like, how long were you going to spend in that room messing with gravity before Gus sets this trap off on you?
We weren't in there that long though, right?
No, it was basically like, I think you all, Kyborg and Bart ended up in the room with like gravity being all messed up. And then as you leave, Gus triggers the ice knives as like a, if you had stayed too long, something bad could have happened.
Mm.
The Room of Wild Shape, which is the next one, it just has listed here, puzzle. This room is enchanted with illusionary magic and is meant to be a puzzle relating to Wild Shape. This felt like such a just improv prompt to throw at you all to start exploring and try to figure out where the answer like lies. But I loved how Gus just kind of let you all come into the conclusion of like, okay, maybe we need a little bit of like this from each biome, and we like presented the statues. Well, maybe if we act like some of them, the solution or the trigger is basically, Micah has written here, if the target tries to walk through the archway without a successful nature check, each beast will have an attack of opportunity on the target. The goal is to provide an uncanny imitation to each beast while in its appropriate habitat. Bat for cave, bear for forest, spider for desert, octopus for ocean. In the notes, Micah writes, each player character must roleplay as one beast, demonstrating something the beast is known for instance, the spider making a web. And then Micah writes, the player character must imitate that beast's call slash sound. And in parentheses, he says, bear equal roar, spider equal clicking, octopus equal good luck, and then bat equal click slash screech.
He knew. He was prepared.
What were y'all thinking the whole time while we were just messing up? if we hadn't gotten there, like,
I think a lot of it was as we were letting you all start to kind of figure out like the solution to the puzzle or even like key into the puzzle. I remember I was throwing a lot of like suggestions at Gus of, well, maybe you could have them roll like an investigation check or like an arcana check and see that like it's related to sound. A lot of it was trying to figure out like what kind of check could we have you make that doesn't just straight up give you the solution, but clues you in on how to find the solution, which was kind of hard to do because of how open-ended this was until came to the answer.
I think it's a real challenge, I think, in D&D to come up with puzzles that are, if you have a particular solution in mind, that sometimes you'll do them and it's like, oh, I think this will be really easy. And then it seems impossible when you're doing it. And then other times people just breeze right through it. And it's like, gosh, darn it. Like, I thought this would be a lot harder. Oh, gosh, darn it. I thought this would be easier. How do I clue people in?
Yeah, it's probably so hard to predict that kind of thing when you're creating something for a D&D module. Yeah.
It's why every now and then, like at the end of last episode, we had written in time for like a combat encounter because we just didn't know how long you all were going to take on that combat encounter. There's a little like back and forth to it. And, you know, like right now, we're recording this when we're also recording like campaign 3. A lot of campaign 1 was written in a very, I don't want to call it railroad fashion. Like we have like kind of cutscenes that'll happen at the end of episodes that are kind of like a fixed points in time that like have to happen somehow. And it's up to like me and Micah to help Gus to like reel you all back if you suddenly just like go super off the rails. But campaign 3 is being written in such like an open-ended way that there's multiple different end stingers just depending on like what you do, since it's a lot more open-ended. But we just recorded, I believe it was episode 4. And at the end of episode 4 in campaign 3, there's a riddle we throw at y'all. And you guys got it like almost immediately. Gus or Micah wrote me and Gus over the weekend and was like, hey, here's this riddle. Let me know if you can figure it out. It took Gus and I so long to try to figure out like what the answer was. Mike. between you and Barbara, like you had the answer and Barbara gives like an alternate answer that I was like, man, that's a really good answer. I wish Which I thought of that.
It was a riddle, but I was like, I don't think my character Gunther would know the answer.
Oh,
right. I was
oh,
like, I knew what it was instantly, but I was like, but I don't know if he would. So it was like a weird, like,
yeah, we had multiple like answers that both I think would have been
good.
Yeah. So Micah felt like really good. He's like, great. Maybe they'll like sit on this riddle for a while. Maybe we'll get there and figure it out. And then immediately Chris had the answer and Barbara had a great backup answer that Gus and I had not thought of at all. So I was just like, man, these guys are so much better than I am at like riddles and
sometimes,
puzzles.
We should just sometimes not. It just depends.
Gus and I should not be the barometer for this, but if we give him a door, we know we can eat up half
an
episode.
Then it's the real challenge. Before we wrap up the episode, I do want to also talk about the huge twist at the end, which again, if you haven't listened to the episode yet, this is about to be spoiled for you. And I don't know why you'd be listening to this.
That's a weird thing to do. If you're listening to this backwards, like what kind of masochist are you?
I love that. If anyone's listening to this backwards, let us know. We have questions for you, but Shaman Seuss turns out to have taken Mud's family and is evil, but we aren't really 100% sure why yet, right?
There is brief mentions of like what Shaman Seuss's goals are. Let me put it that way.
Right.
If you re-listen to earlier points in the episode, there are moments where like you're very suspicious of Clay and you're wanting to know, like, I think it's at the end of or the beginning of last episode, you mentioned, I want to know if Clay is being truthful. And so you roll an insight check and you roll really well. And Gus goes, well, Clay is being really truthful. It's like the motivations behind Clay that are kind of being obfuscated, right?
Well, yeah.
Gus is very careful with his wording with some of that stuff of, would you catch on to this? I think
which is funny because listening back, I think we realized that. Like, I was just like, oh, I see what he did. I see the way he's kind of dodging around this, because we find out at the end of this episode that Clay might not be real.
Yeah. So like,
maybe he doesn't have a brother.
When he's like, Clay is being truthful, it's like, well, what is Clay?
Exactly.
What is Clay? Truth? And how is Clay?
And where is Clay? Yeah.
Why is Clay? All the philosophical questions you want from a Dungeons & Dragons podcast about a bunch of goofballs trying to climb a tower.
I do like, exactly. I really, again, Elise Willems, amazing job as Seuss, really getting to like, I don't know. It's really fun to hear that old lady play kind of bad, you know, when old lady breaks bad. I think a lot of us were suspecting Clay was the bad guy, right? Was that what I'm trying to put myself back there when
I don't know if I suspected that, but it definitely seemed like something was weird.
Was up with Clay. I think we picked up on that. We just didn't know what.
Something was off. Yeah. I think I would have pushed Gus if when you were making insight checks into Clay, if you had rolled really high, like above a nat 20, or like a nat 20 or like above a 20, have him clue in if Clay is being truthful, but you feel like something's off. Just to like help give you all this, like, you've clued into something, so you are on the right track, keep it up, you know, but not like immediately give away what's going on. Just gotta help with that. Like, I really like that you guys are suspicious of everybody, but when you do start cluing into things, you're like, this is the puzzle. How do we figure it out?
We weren't suspicious of Seuss, I don't think.
I don't think you all were either.
No, I think it's because we were like, oh, well, this was Mud's mentor, and it's this like old frail little shrimp lady. Like, what's to be and it's Elise Willems voicing her. What's to be suspicious of?
And Micah threw in flashbacks with Mud and his mentor that like pull at the heartstrings a little bit of, oh yeah, they're really close. Like, there's no way. Until like actually the end of this, right, is kind of this reveal of like something's been going on with memories. And Seuss offers for Mud to reach out and touch these like these stones or give these stones back, I believe. Micah had actually written two instingers for this episode, one where Mud accepts and one where Mud doesn't.
Wait, so
in terms of like giving up his family or not.
Oh,
wait. So what can you read the alternate version?
Yeah. So that what the setup to this, right, was Seuss reaches for a nearby lever from the ceiling. Something wrapped in change lowers slowly toward the ground, dangling over the pit. The change finally settle in front of your face, entangled amongst the shackles as an orb, a brown crystal orb. Seuss solemnly says, I'll make the simple, Mud. I know you have the diagem and the scroll. You don't need to give them to me. All you need to do is touch the orb. That's it. Just one little touch of the finger. If you don't, well, Clay here is going to see how far this pit actually goes. And then Clay mentions, like, don't do it, Mud. That orbits. And then, like, Clay gets pulled away.
Yeah.
Depending on how Mud responds, like, Mud could have touched this orb or not. But it is the Stinger one, if he doesn't touch it, is Sue says, have it your way. Sue waves her staff and Clay is thrown into the pit. You hear Clay screaming down into this pit. He screams so, his scream seems to carry on for so long until you hear just silence. And then Sue says, don't test me, Mud. I've got two more bramble cracks and three of your friends waiting to take the plunge next. Just touch the orb and I'll let everyone go. And that would have been the like alt stinger.
How many, hey, wait, what if Mud had just been like, no, and then just dropped them all? Because with revealing that Clay is like, supposedly not real. It's like, that's kind of like a freebie, right? But after that,
right.
The real ones,
we would have seen what it come up with. Like if anything, I think Micah would have seen Mud's reaction and then written the next module accordingly. It's just lucky that it was the end stinger that we did this at.
Yeah.
So that way Micah could adjust, just like, you know, give Mud some player agency to control the story and figure out like which way the next module is going to go.
Yeah. We'll talk about it later, but sometimes the break between episodes is really helpful from a character perspective on thinking about you want to do.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and then sometimes we would record like back-to-back episodes and it would be like, oh my God, I'm overwhelmed by information. Yeah.
So if we recorded back-to-back, I remember like we take a bathroom break and sometimes I'd be like thinking like, okay, how do I want to handle this?
Oh man, you and I are so different. I just go head empty, no thought in between recordings. I'm just like,
or you'd be like Blaine, where he relies on the like last time on episode that Gus has to read through. But if it's really confusing intro, Blaine will go like, I got nothing. I don't even remember what happened last episode.
Well,
yeah,
this was a fun one.
Very fun.
Yeah, really good. Well, patron members, thank you so much for subscribing and supporting us. We could not do this show without you. Hope you've enjoyed this episode of Second Wind. We'll see you for next episode, episode 70.
Get ready. Bye. Bye. Gotta end with the same energy we started with.
Gum Gum out!
Is that TJ Gum Gum?
69.
Bye.
Nice.